Okay, so thank you very much for coming along. We're going to be talking about debugging and diagnostics on ASP.NET 5. Who here was on the previous talk we just did about Glimpse on ASP.NET 5? Okay, so a couple of people. So what we're going to be taking a look at here is kind of a bit of a rundown of, from a debugging and diagnostics perspective on ASP.NET 5, what tools are available for us, okay? What weapons do we have in our tool belt, as it were, and what can we bring to the forefront when we have problems in an ASP.NET 5 world? Now, it's important to say that a lot of this is in flight, okay? So if you have any feedback on what this experience should be, okay, or how it could be improved, or what you think we should bring to the table here, we're certainly after feedback on that. So, hello, my name is Anthony Vanderhorn. I spend most of my time working on a project called Glimpse. Who's ever heard of Glimpse before? Okay, so about half the room. And I recently joined Microsoft, okay? And so I spend most of my time dealing with debugging and diagnostics. And ASP.NET 5 is something that we're working very heavily towards, having ready for the community and stuff like that very soon. So, our objective here is to try and make your applications better, okay? And how can we do this? We're trying to figure out ways that you can make your application better, okay? And help you understand what's going on, you know, when you do have problems. So we're gonna be taking a look at this kind of sample project. Now note, I have a couple of things to kind of lay the land with. What I'm showing you here is like very, 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 very bleeding edge, meaning that like literally I was talking to developers last night and this morning that were working on this stuff, okay, as well as myself. I did some check-ins this morning to try and get this stuff to work. So if something doesn't work, well, we'll kind of have to use our imaginations, because some of the stuff we're doing here is, just to give you an idea, usually when we develop inside of Microsoft on this stuff, we work towards something called like the CI feed, which is like as packages get updated, they come through on the CI, from the CI server. We're actually doing all of this on volatile, okay, which is even worse, okay? So we're hoping that all of this is going to go smoothly, and which it should. And all of this is kind of post, a lot of these bits and pieces are post beta 8. Who's been tracking like the ASP.NET 5 releases and all that sort of stuff? Okay, a couple of people. Okay, so what we might do is, I'll just take a quick look at this sample project first, okay, to try and get a little bit of a grounding of what ASP.NET 5 is, okay, and you know, how we can start looking at some of these bits and pieces. So I have a sample project here, which is pretty much just file new project. So how many people are running Visual Studio 2015? Okay, so about half the people. So this is just file new project from there. The last templates that I installed were beta 8, okay, for ASP.NET 5. So you can go to the ASP.NET blog, okay, to get down the latest updates for Visual Studio for that. And so what that means is when I go file new project for this sample here, I'm actually gonna get beta 8 included by default. We've actually gone past that, so I'm actually using like the latest RC bits, okay, that are coming off the server, build server. So when I do that, I'm gonna go play, and what we're doing in the background is doing the compile, obviously, and we're gonna get up the page, and we'll see that in a sec. And this isn't anything revolutionary, okay? This is just kind of like your default template, hello world, welcome to ASP.NET 5. In terms of like some concepts that, you know, we look at, who's done like MVC development before, okay? Or tried developing for MVC, cool. So pretty much everyone in the room. So when it comes to ASP.NET 5, if you're used to kind of MVC development, like nothing that much has changed, okay? Like a lot of things have changed, but at the same time, we've still got a lot of the patterns and idioms that we're used to. So for instance, you can see I've got index, you know, action here on my home controller. I'm returning an action result. This is kind of the pattern that you're used to, okay? Does that make sense? Where things start to try and change a little bit, okay, is on this startup.cs. Okay, and your startup.cs is kind of the equivalent of the global ASAX. Who's ever played around with the global ASAX before? Okay, cool. So this is kind of your new version of that. And with ASP.NET 5, we've kind of got a lot of new concepts coming through as kind of like the base foundation building blocks, as it were, for the platform. So if you're just interested in building like an MVC application, you can get away without needing to necessarily know about a lot of these concepts, but it'll certainly help if you start learning a lot of these concepts. Now, to take a little bit of a step back before I start diving into what we're seeing here, kind of part of the motivation for creating ASP.NET 5 was modularity. So has anyone noticed how like MVC has iterated a lot quicker, like the releases have happened a lot more often than what the rest of the actual .NET framework has? Okay? Yeah, most people have noticed that. What we've kind of done is we're moving towards a point with software development where if we can iterate a lot quicker and a lot faster with releases for these frameworks that we're coming up with, okay, we're in a lot better place and people are in a lot better position to be able to adopt these frameworks, okay, and build on top of them. So we'll kind of set out with a goal of how do we make all of .NET, okay, and we kind of started with ASP.NET, but it's kind of gone over into .NET itself, a lot more modular. Okay, and we kind of said, well, things that are on NuGet are very modular and they can version independently and, you know, I can get new releases of all of that, and that's exactly what's happened with MVC. So what happens if we could put the whole of the .NET framework as just various NuGet packages or various packages on NuGet? Okay, that would be really awesome. And so that's what we've done. Okay, so the core CLR team's done a great job of being able to, you know, break up the .NET framework into various packages, and likewise, ASP.NET has been broken up into various components. So as an idea, classic ASP.NET, as it were, is kind of tied to IIS. Part of this, you know, resetting of the ground, as it were, was like, okay, well, what happens if people don't want to use IIS? Okay, we've kind of figured out that there's our use cases for that. We're kind of like web API, where it doesn't have that tie to IIS. You can actually host it in a console or something like that if you choose to. We kind of also said, what happens if you wanted to run something cross-platform? Okay, so you don't want to be tied just to Windows. You know, you might have infrastructure already in place for Linux or for Mac or whatever else. You know, you should be able to leverage that. So this kind of effort behind ASP.NET is one to learn what we've take away lessons from the last 15 years that we've had .NET, okay, and say, what would we change given a new world, okay, and, you know, a new grounding? At the same time, is how do we keep a lot of what people are used to and the idioms and whatever else, like, you know, the controller and actions that we saw before. People know that. People are familiar with that. People have a lot of code invested in that. So how do we make that easy to make the transition? Okay, so these are the sorts of things, as it were, basically make up ASP.NET 5. Okay, so modularity, lessons learned, hosting independence, and platform independence. Does that kind of make sense as a bit of a grounding? Does that match kind of the things that people have been hearing coming through from like the ASP.NET team and the community on this front? Now, we can get really deep into like all of the various new bits and pieces, but as I said, I'm really wanting to focus in on like the diagnostic story that we have here, because it actually turns out there's a lot of really cool stuff that we're doing. So to kind of give that grounding, one thing I do need to semi-talk about here is your startup.cs, which, as I said before, is kind of your replacement to your global ASAX. So here we can see we've got a constructor, and we're doing a bunch of things on startup there. The two things that are kind of the most important to kind of get your head around here is configure services, okay, and then configure. Now, what configure services does is, who's ever heard of dependency injection? Okay, so most people know of dependency injection. So configure services is where you're configuring those dependencies. So you'll literally say, like in the case of iLogger that we're looking at before, iLogger should resolve to nlog, or whatever it happens to be. Okay, that's not quite a great example, but you know, this is where you're setting up your registrations. And it turns out a lot of other frameworks out there, whether it be MVC, Glimpse, for instance, or whatever else, have a whole heap of service registrations that they need to register as well. So just above here, we can see that, you know, we've got the configure services, and we can see we're adding Entity Framework, okay, or we're adding MVC. So if we actually looked at the implementations of those methods, you'd actually see a whole bunch of code that kind of looks like this, where we're adding a transient registration, which means every time we ask for it, we're going to get a new one for email sender, and it's going to be an auth email sender. Okay, so that's that case, but for MVC, it might be, you know, what controller registration factory you're going to get, or controller factory that you're going to get, or whatever else it happens to be. So that's going on here. And once all of those, the container is, or all the DI registrations have set up, then we can actually start doing stuff with those registrations. So at this point, we're doing or setting up the equivalent of what was HTTP modules and handlers. Who knows about HTTP modules and handlers? Okay, so maybe a quarter of the room. Essentially, HTTP modules and handlers were a way of saying, without the user needing to change your code, I want arbitrary code to run at the beginning of a request, at the end of the request, you know, at all different parts of the life cycle of a request, okay? But then also, that's modules, handlers said, I actually want to make an endpoint available at like slash glimpse, okay? And I want to serve up specific HTML there without the user having to change their application. So those were handlers and modules. So in this case, we've got things called middleware that we're actually setting up. Okay, and middleware is kind of the same as it's if you merge the two together and said, well, what would we get if we merged handlers and modules together? And we greatly simplified modules, so it only had pretty much like two events for simplicity, begin and end. And then handlers is where we can actually serve up data. So what actually happens inside of your middleware, which we can take a look at later if we get time, is a particular method will get called, like typically your invoke method by convention, and then you can run whatever code you want, okay, before, then you call the next piece of middleware, and then you run whatever code afterwards, okay? And so in that, you can return whatever results you want or whatever else. So this is what's going on, as we're saying here, use these different pieces of middleware, okay? These different things are going to be added to the pipeline. So for instance, here where we're going to use static files, we're adding static files before we add authentication in this case. And so we're saying people should just be able to access the static files which are inside of our WW root, like images or whatever else, okay? Then we want to add authentication to the pipeline. And so this is a very modular approach. So if you want to change the order in which these things occur, you can do that. So does that kind of, like just as a very, very high level, I know that probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but you know, just as a core, at a high level, we're merging HTTP handlers and modules, and we've got something that's much simpler, hopefully, in the form of a piece of middleware, okay, that we can do arbitrary things at the beginning and or actually serving up during a request or modifying the payload. If we try and get into this, let's look at some new concepts. So it turns out there's this package called Microsoft ASP.NET Diagnostics. So as I said before, everything in the new world is packages, okay? So it's not as useful to think of things as DLLs as we had previously, but more as packages. So inside of this package, it happens to have a DLL, okay? But we're gonna look at what we can actually do with this particular package. And it turns out it can help us do some things with exceptions, okay? And it can also help us to get some information out from the runtime. So let's actually have a look at what form that takes. So inside of our project JSON, which our project JSON is kind of the equivalent of our NuGet, like where we defined our NuGet dependencies previously. So in here we can see all the different packages that I'm taking a dependency on. So in here, we're going to go Microsoft.diagnostics, ASP.NET.diagnostics. Okay, cool. So I'm adding this package and it's saying, what version would you like to add? Okay, and because we're running against the absolute latest bits, I'm going to say, please find me whatever the latest version is that you have available. So we've now added that to our project, and you can see Visual Studio's going in the background and it's saying, I'm restoring this package for you, I'm going to find it. Now, we've found it. To hook this up, what we do is we go back to our startup, and what we want to actually add, okay, to our solution here is our developer exception page, okay? And our development exception page is essentially our yellow screen of death, okay? So what useful information should we get when an exception, unhandled exception happens within our application? And as you can see here, I've got logic flow control, okay? So I can say, look, if it's development, I want this to occur. If it's other environments like production, I don't want this to be in play. So we've got that, and let's say I go through to my controller, and in the about controller, what I actually want to do is, you know, throw a new exception. My test exception. Okay, so let's stop, and then we'll restart this. And so now we should get the system coming up again. We should be able to hit home because I put that particular exception inside of the about page. And so now, if I go to the about page, we see that our exception was hit as per normal. Okay, but if I go on from that, this is the exception page that I'm presented with, okay? So quite a little bit different from our yellow screen of death environment, and hopefully a good bit more useful. So from the get-go, we can see that we've got the stack, okay, that we're presented with. We can also start getting out what was passed in the query. In this case, there was no actual query string. We can see cookies, and we can also see all the headers that were passed over. From a stack perspective, though, what we can see is obviously the whole stack that ended up producing that exception. I can see the raw stack itself. But what I can start to do is for exceptions where I actually have the, let's say, the error information for it, okay, in the stack, we can actually click on this, okay, and we can actually get source code, okay, for the that surrounds the where the exception actually occurred. So right from the get-go, instead of just having some random place in your code that had an exception and not really having a sense of what code around it or what the code was around it, we can actually start going in and pulling out source code for what happened with that exception. So right from the get-go, this is a lot more useful than we had with the yellow screen of death. Do people think this is something they might use? Okay, cool, awesome. Okay, so that's kind of like number one that we get, okay, when we add this. And one thing you'll note is the default project template that we created, you saw me manually add it to the project. Normally it's already added by default, but if you've already got a project, you know, this is something you may choose to add, okay, if it's not there already. Kind of the next thing that's in the pipeline with this is we can go app.runtime info page, okay? And so what this one does is, again, if we go play, and you'll see these are pages that if I'd gone to that yellow screen of death, the source code for that, it was adding and modifying my pipeline, okay? So if we go back, and this is kind of that example of what middleware is doing, you can see that it's still the same URL that I accessed before, and what this piece of middleware did was wrote to the stream, okay, directly. So I was able to do that. Whereas, let's say with this diagnostics info page, okay, what is its actual runtime info, I think it is. Okay, so here's this runtime info page. So this is more equivalent to a HTTP handler, so it's writing to the stream as well. And so here we can see what version of Windows we're using, or see that we're using Windows, what version of the runtime that we're using, you know, all sorts of different information, as well as all the packages that are actually loaded within my system. So you can see here, for instance, there's a bunch of ND framework ones. They're all RC1. As well as all of these other packages, which are all RC1, okay? And RC1 hasn't been released yet, but this is what you get when you start working on some of the, against the very, very latest bits, okay? So again, kind of like useful high-level information. Who would find that useful? Okay, like you can imagine situations where you'd want to know for your running application what bits were in play. Okay, so we've got that. Now, kind of the next bit is logging, okay? And so when it comes to logging, we've got a couple of different packages that we can bring to the party. And if we take a look at this, we'll go over here, we'll paste them in underneath our diagnostics. And you'll see right from the get-go, logging's kind of modular as well. So we've got the core extensions, logger there, and then we've got console and debug. So the core logging one, what that does is adds the different logging infrastructure to our project, okay? But then console and debug add writing the debug information to the console, okay, versus writing debug information to the debug window, okay? So if you don't want console information or logging information output to your debug window, you just remove that package, okay, and it's gone. Likewise, if you don't want it putting out to your console, log output to your console, you can remove that package as well, okay? But I think you'll actually find that this is quite useful. And then once we have that, we can go in and we can add logging into our pipeline. And so let's do that here, okay? And so we've said for the logging factory, our minimum level that we want to know about is informational. And we want to add, okay, the console middleware, okay, and we want to add the debug middleware. Again, if I was to comment out one of these, like the debug one, it wouldn't show up, okay? Or if I put it inside a development, okay, if I was in production, it wouldn't show up, okay? So this is very composable how you can bring these things together. So this time, I'm going to start this slightly differently, so that we actually get a console window. So notice previously I didn't get a console window like this pop up. So I've just changed how Visual Studio starts my application. And in this, it hasn't opened up a web browser. That's something that hopefully we'll get in time for the RC release. But we can see here it's telling me that our application is now started and it's listening on port 5000. So if I open this up on port 5000, instead of the one that IIS Express generated for me. Okay, you can see that in the background, we've started outputting information, okay? And so this is log information that's telling us what happened during this request that I just made. So already from the get-go, we can see that the controller that we activated was home, okay, and the action was index. We didn't pass any argument information. We know the model state was valid, so that we actually entered into that action. We can see what the view result was, okay? And we can also see how long that took to execute. Okay? So this is starting to produce very useful information right off the bat, okay? So as we navigate around, we can start getting more and more of that. Sorry, so didn't mean to do that. Come back here, so as we go to the about page, which has got an exception on it. So we should see the exception info pop up in a sec. As I said, some of these bits are quite new, so. Should see that come in just a second. Start and stop that again. Okay. Okay, let's shut that down. 5000 again. And this time we want to go to contact. Hit the exception. Before. Okay, so we can start seeing, like, when we get exception data coming out from the system, that's also output to the log to the console. Okay, and we're also getting this to our output window. Okay, so we can start seeing the same stack information and same logging information that we had previously. Okay, so who thinks that those two like are worth having, like for the console and for the debug window? Cool. What do you think you'd use more? First console? Who would use the console version? Okay, versus the debug window? Okay, so more people think they'd use debug. Cool. Okay, good to know. Okay, from there, let's remove this exception. And what we actually wanted to start doing is injecting some of our own custom logging, because now we've decided that, wow, you know, this information that we're getting out is quite useful. What's some things that we can actually do with it? So from here, we're going to do some dependency injection, okay? So we can go public and our controller, and we want to pass in an logger factory, okay? Logger factory. And inside of here, I want to set logger equals logger factory dot, and we can see here's create. And this is kind of like the usual way that you'd expect kind of logging to work. If my computer can catch up with me. Okay, and then we want to create that guy. Might as well make it read-only. Okay, so now within the About Me page, I actually want to do some logger.warn. Okay, and so the message I actually want to say is we are about to do something expensive. Okay, whatever it is that you might have that you're wanting to log. Okay, and then after that, I want to say we have finished doing something expensive. Okay, so let's see if this works the same way that we'd expect it to before with the way that it was showing up in the console. Okay, so we did that inside of the About page. So let's come back here. And then let's actually make that a little wider. And from here, we go to the About Me page, and we can see our warnings showing up in place there. Okay, so as we would expect, that's showing up. Okay, so if you want to control the levels of which this stuff is coming out, so for instance, if you want the debug window to have more logging, a lower logging level, than not, you can do that. Then what the console does, you've got a great deal of flexibility. You can even say, in terms of when you register this stuff, what classes you want to actually see the logging information for. So if you want to go right down to verbose, okay, but you're getting the world publishing information to you, you can say, well, I only want to see verbose information for home controller, okay, for instance. And some of the ways that we can start doing that is inside of our startup. We can see that the console has actually got a few overloads, and so we can see that we have two that we can play with. I think the first one's provider level. Okay, and so from inside of here, okay, we can actually get access to the name of the logger that's producing the log, okay, and the level that it's wanting to produce. So we could say, hey, we want to turn this one off, okay, but everything else is going to be on, or vice versa. Okay, and but then debug would still operate the same way because it doesn't have the same condition in play. Does that kind of make sense? It's pretty easy to configure and to control how this sort of stuff is working. Okay, we can even, and I might only do this if we get time to loop back around, but one of the coolest things about what we can do here is actually start providing what's called structured or semantic logging. Who's heard of those terms before? Okay, cool. So what we can actually do is, let's say we wanted to print out the message that's actually produced here, okay? So we actually want to go logger, perhaps if I write up correctly, so there, and we want to log warning again, and we want to go the message we returned was, okay, and inside of this, we want to go message. Okay, now, if you're used to C#, you'll notice that, well, this doesn't quite work, what I'm writing here. This really shouldn't work. Okay, now there's string interpolation, okay, which means that if I put like the dollar sign and whatever else, that'll work. But this is something different again. So what we've actually done is we've said that we want message here, okay, the string that we're naming message, to be equal, okay, to this value. So under the hood, what's actually going to do is replace this with a zero, okay, put this value into that place holder, okay, but we're also going to end up with essentially a dictionary, okay, that's associated with this log statement. So if you create your own logging provider, okay, and your own logger, if you want to get strongly typed information out, okay, like this message, for instance, you can start doing that. Okay, so for instance, there's various places throughout the framework that they're actually saying, like the home controller index that was actually, or the controller an action that was published, if you want to have typed access to that or access to the string, you don't have to parse the string to figure that out. You can actually get the dictionary, okay, that has that semantic data built into it. Okay, and there's other tools that are built on top of that that can start actually getting that data out. Lastly, some of the cool things that we can do as we're playing around with like kind of log formats that we're getting out is inside of here, we can return true. Okay, and what true does, if we have a look, is includes scope information. So you'll notice that in the log statements that we were producing previously, it didn't really tell you which page that it was generating the log statements for. You could kind of work that out, but it wasn't actually telling you that. So now, what it'll actually do is see these lines that are being produced, okay? It's actually telling us which requests that they're actually being produced for and which scope it's being produced for. So you can actually create your own scopes if you want. And if we stop that, I'll just show you that very, very quickly. Inside of here, we can go logger.begin scope, okay? Now with the way that scopes usually work, we want a using statement because of the way it works. Because it returns an iDisposable, and so we want the scope to start up there and finish down here. And then the scope that we're defining, okay, is my slow function, or whatever it might happen to be. And so if we start that now, okay, because we've got that scope in play, we've got the scope of the request, and then we've got a couple of inner scopes down to our scope, which means that we can actually walk back up the stack, okay, to get this information coming out. And we want to go to the about, okay? So we can start seeing my slow function. So we can see that there's three scopes in play, okay? So you can get context information from any one of those scopes. So if you need to get access to, for instance, to the URL, the request path, okay, we can do that from within our scope. Okay, so those are kind of normal logging concepts. Now, one of the cool things about logging, if we get time, I'll show you how to get out some of that semantic data from these logs. But one of the interesting things that we can do is actually, on top of this infrastructure, we can plug in other logging frameworks. So instead of throughout your code base taking a dependency on Nlog or Log4Net or SiriLog or whatever it happens to be, okay, if you like the interfaces that are produced here, you can use these ones, just like what we've done here. You get the advantage of using this type of like console logging or debug logging or whatever else, but you can still have it output through Nlog or whatever your traditional logging framework is that you actually want to use. Okay, so with this, by default, we're not actually going to be writing out to any log files or whatever else. That's up to you with what actual log provider you want to underpin the system with. Okay, does that kind of make sense? Cool. So now we're going to start looking at some really cool stuff. And I'm going to flip over to some stuff that I've already got created for this, just because it's a little bit more of a setup involved here. So with log files, okay, we've talked about how I can start getting out semantic logging there, okay? But the way that I was getting out that semantic logging is still not that fantastic, okay? So I know that there's gonna be a dictionary that's in play. Excuse me. I know there's a dictionary that's gonna be in play. I know it's gonna have a key message, and I know it's gonna be equal to this value. But what happens if the objects that I'm wanting to publish, okay, or make available to me are much more complex? Like, what happens if I wanted to publish HTTP context? Okay, that doesn't make sense for a log. Or what happens if I wanted to publish, you know, the controller itself, okay, that's being used for this, okay? For tools that are much more sophisticated than just a text output. So when we start looking at something like Glimpse, okay, and we might actually take a quick look at that first to provide some context, the way that we build our infrastructure, we need access to rich in-memory objects, okay? We don't want to be parsing strings for our information, so we want access to these objects so that we can actually do something with them. So if we have an instance of, let's say, the controller itself, we can ask it, what is your name? What's your ID? You know, all this type of information that we previously didn't have. Okay, and as they add things over time, we can much more easily get access to it. okay, because we've got the rich object. So from here, I'm going to take a little bit of a look at Glimpse, and then we're going to see how this diagnostics infrastructure publishes these rich objects. So if I run this sample, okay, here's one that I've already added Glimpse to, and what we'll see is what Glimpse looks like. So this sample looks exactly the same as the previous example, except we'll have some other bits and pieces of information showing up here. So this is kind of like the next pillar that Glimpse that is made available to us from a diagnostics perspective. So we've started off with kind of like an exception page, like the runtime information page. We've got some really cool logging infrastructure, which brings to the table, you know, the console stuff, as well as semantic logging and scoping and all these great things. But then on top of that, kind of the next layer is something like Glimpse. And here, what Glimpse does is in your page, okay, we're actually providing you information about what happened for a given request, okay? And so in this case, we know that the total request time was 325 milliseconds, and the majority of that was actually spent on the server, okay? Versus the how much time was on the network versus the client, okay? And we can actually start seeing the breakdown of this information as we go along. We can also see that in this case, the controller and action that were in play, okay, were home and controller, or home contact rather, and we can see the rendering times of each of those and where they happened in terms of the duration through the request. Okay, so this is kind of the rich information that we can start getting out when we have rich objects made available to us from the system. Okay, so trying to match the question of, like, for this request that just happened, what occurred? What happened? What decisions did the system make? What route did it execute? What action did it execute as a consequence? Okay, without having to trawl through text files or, you know, even console outputs to try and semantically understand what's going on here. We want to present you this information in the context of where you're at. Okay, so in this case, it's within the page itself. And so from there, we can even go a step further and we can open up Glimpse into kind of its full screen capacity, and we can see all the details for any of the history that we've actually had. Okay, so from here, I can actually look at the last request that just occurred, and note, all the stuff that I'm showing you here is very early beta, like not even beta bits. These is like still stuff that's in development. This is the first time that, literally the first, oh well, the previous talk, but the first time that we're showing this stuff publicly. Okay, so it's fairly raw. So we actually want to get a lot more information coming out here than what we have currently. But here we can see like the route that was selected. We can see which action that then went on to, and which view. Okay, and as we navigate around the site in real time, we'll get more data flowing into the system. Okay, so I can go to the About page. Okay, and you can see those requests popping up behind us. And at the moment, it doesn't work this way, but it's intended that you'll be in follow mode when you open up Glimpse. So as you navigate around, Glimpse will be in lockstep with you, at least the full screen mode will be in lockstep with you, showing you these details for the request that just happened. Okay? So this is kind of the future of where we're going. So who thinks something like this, you know, obviously a bit more polished, would be useful? Okay, cool, good to see. As you can tell, we're showing a lot of information here. A lot of it, to be able to present it the way we do, is a very different to just showing like a string statement. You know, we've got a lot of formatting going on, you know, and a lot of semantic meaning being brought to the data that we're actually seeing. And trying to work with a log file, okay, or strings or stuff like this, just doesn't cut it, okay? So the way that Glimpse actually works is these are the messages that Glimpse is actually building, okay, the information that we're showing on the screen off. Okay, so all of this data that I just showed you here makes up this one request that we're seeing in this pop-up window. Okay, and that's a lot more data, okay, than what, let's say, we're showing you in the console output at the moment, okay, or that we could even get from semantic logs. So what we do with that then, and how we make that available, is kind of like the last pillar of what I wanted to discuss as far as like diagnostics on ISP.NET is 5 is. So we'll come back to our sample, and so we'll stop this, and let's have a look at this repository. Now this repository is pretty poor man, okay, so don't worry too much about this. But essentially what we've got is one method, okay, which is returning an enumerable of user. And user isn't anything revolutionary, it's just age and name. And what it does is we're just creating an in-memory list. Okay, so forget these two bits above and below it at the moment. Okay, so we're just an in-memory list of users that we're returning. Now, it turns out that we're passing in options, okay, into here as well, okay, which is the number of records and the starting record, okay. And what we'd actually like to do is publish an event, okay, for tools like Glimpse or for other tools that need this type of semantic data, okay, even your own tools, to be able to get this out. So here, I'm actually saying, I want to write an event that's going to publish the options, okay, prior to this occurring, and then I want to publish an event that has the options and the result post that operation occurring. Okay, and the name of the operation here is begin find user, and the one at the end is after find user. So, a couple of things to understand here. You can see that one, we're doing diagnostic source is enabled, okay, to start with. With most logging frameworks that produce information, if something is required, if an operation is really expensive, okay, to get like some information. So you could imagine during routing, okay, we want to build up like a physical object about all the decisions that the routing engine made, okay, to produce the given route that was actually executed. Okay. To do that may be expensive. Maybe it adds, you know, 5 milliseconds to a request. Okay. Not that bad, okay, but you could imagine that in a production scenario, that might be something that you want hit for every single request. So what we can do is with this diagnostic source, which is this last major foundation bit, what we can do is we can do a pre-flight check, okay, to say even way before we even do the log statement, because most people, if you've seen like logging frameworks, they'll go, you know, is debug level enabled or whatever it happens to be, but that's not fine grain enough. Okay, because we want this on an individual event level, okay, which is different to, for this class, is diagnostics level turned on. Okay, this is for this specific event that I'm going to raise, which I might have multiple events as I do within the one class, is anyone interested in it? So that if I am going to pay an expensive toll, okay, to actually execute this, I don't want to even execute that up front. Okay, I want to wait. Okay, and so what we can do here is only if this particular event, the begin event in this case, is enabled, then we want to write this out. And then finally, in the post event, if it is enabled, then I want to write it out. In this particular case, you might go, well, there's no expensive operation here. But as I said, you could imagine like that routing engine or, you know, whatever else, where you don't want to publish a million events during tight iterations or whatever else that engine is doing, but you're happy to collect state information as you go along to then finally publish. But you don't want to collect that state information if you don't have to. Okay, so this is where this can really, really help you. And the other thing that comes out of this is what it produces is most diagnostics infrastructure makes you pay a pretty severe cost, okay, to turning it on in production. Okay, so most, like best case scenario, it affects every other request that's running inside of your application. Worst case scenario, it affects the whole server when you turn on diagnostics. In this case, we've come up with the way that diagnostic source works is it only affects the given request, okay, that you are currently on. So for Glimpse and all that cool information that we're showing you and all that detail that we were showing you there, let's say collecting that adds 50 milliseconds to a request, just totally hypothetically. It's much, much quicker than that, but just hypothetically. You don't necessarily want that toll paid for every single request that's happening on the server, but you still want the option to be able to turn on Glimpse. Yeah, that's something that we can actively do here. Okay, so it's actually really, really cool because most infrastructure like this, you can't get that fine grain of control here, okay, whereas we can with this. Okay, and anyone can tap into this information. Okay, so let's say you're instrumenting your own code like this. If you then instrumented Glimpse, for instance, to want to start pulling out to leverage your information, you could write a custom plugin for Glimpse, which let's say you've got a shopping cart and you want the shopping cart information to be showed, you could publish an event, which is the object is actually your shopping cart. Okay, the object that represents that. Okay? And then you could make that available to Glimpse or to whatever other mechanism that you're using within your system. Maybe you've got some other telemetry system that's in play and you don't want to scatter your code base, okay, with that particular framework or with those APIs. Okay? This is a really good place to do it. So what we've been doing is going back through like MVC, ASP.NET, and all this sort of stuff, and this is all for the ASP.NET 5 stuff, and adding these sorts of diagnostic source events. Okay, so we know when a control, an action is starting and an action is finishing. We know when the routing is happening. We know when Entity Framework is about to start creating a query. Okay, and all of that we can tap into on a request by request basis. Okay, so highly, highly, highly efficient. Okay, and so just an example of how we actually use that. There's two ways. So by default, the part that's in kind of like the core framework itself, like as in is a system.dll, system.diagnostics, I think it's called, is this concept of a diagnostics listener. Okay, and essentially it's got an observable. Who's used to dealing with observables before? Okay, so think of it as a .NET event, okay? And you can basically, we can tap on top of that raw event, okay? Or we can use this much nicer adapter, okay, that we've built on top of it, okay? And this adapter is a separate package, okay? So it's built on top of that event that's being published. And so what we can do is I can actually set some breakpoints here. And if we start up this project, and we have a look at which action, I'm actually publishing that event data from. Here we go, about. So we want to hit the about page. So we hit that. We'll come back in here. Okay, and you'll see my begin find user has actually been hit. Okay, and the way that that is hooked up, okay, is via this by this registration. Okay, because we're saying we want to match to this event, okay? And we care about the fact that this event is being raised. And then we can actually see the object being passed through here. Now, there's a couple of other important concepts. You might be going, well, like this object that was published only had like records and start. Yeah, there's some other properties being added here to my object. You'll notice that this isn't actually user options, which was being published. It's actually iUser options. And the reason that this is important is because, let's say Glimpse, it wants to care about MVC, it wants to care about Entity Framework, ADO, networking, you know, all these different frameworks. In the new world, ASP.NET is built up of like 100 packages or 75 packages or something. So if we wanted to know about each one of those types, okay, we would need to have a dependency on every single one of those packages, whereas you mightn't be using every single one of those packages. So who's heard of a concept called duck typing before? Okay, so a couple of people. So what we actually do is iUser options is an object, okay, and in this case, you might be going, well, it's in my code base, but pretend this repository wasn't in my code base. This interface actually lives inside of my code base. So it's a copy, okay, just the interface definition of what user options actually looks like. So you could imagine controller, the properties that are actually on controller that live in MVC, versus in my code base, I have my copy of what a controller looks like, but I only care about a couple of properties. So it means that I can manage my dependencies very well. So Glimpse actually has virtually zero dependencies, okay, when we're collecting the information, okay, because we have these duck-typed properties or objects, okay, that we can actually pass data into. So I know this is kind of like a fairly low-level concept, okay, but at a high level, we have diagnostic source. It works super efficiently because we can do pre-checks to see if we want to publish an event. We can publish rich objects, okay, over that. We can consume those rich objects directly, or if we have dependency issues, okay, we can take, you know, an indirect dependency on those objects, okay? So super, super useful. Now, in terms of how this actually works, what I was thinking is that because we've got like 10 minutes, I might actually try adding some features to Glimpse, okay, which are built on top of diagnostic source, okay, so that you can see, so we can see if this works. So I haven't practiced this demo, okay, because I wanted to live code this to make sure that, hey, look, it works for everyone, including me. And so let's give this a burl. So what I've done is in this demo project, you can see that I've obviously got the Glimpse source code, okay? So that's what we've added here. Now, the exact structure and makeup of the Glimpse source code isn't particularly important, but what is important is you'll see that when I want to consume, okay, diagnostic source events, you can see that I go diagnostics name, then I've got the method that I want to consume it on. So if I go into Glimpse, where that actually is, okay, we can see for MVC, this is where I'm actually doing the same thing, okay? So diagnostics name before action, okay? And here, I'm actually passing in the objects that I actually care about, okay? So like HTTP context, route data, all this sort of stuff. And you'll notice that there's a lot of interfaces going on here. This is because I don't want a dependency on any of MVC's types, okay? Because I don't want to have that dependency problem that we discussed, yeah? So this is where we're actually wanting to do. Now, we've got a fair few of these inspectors, okay, because we're getting a fair bit of data. So what we're going to do is just come down here, and we want to add a new event. Okay, so we'll stop debugging, we're going to add a new event. And the event that we want to add, okay, if we go to source code for MVC, so we can see here's the source code. This source code was added 4 days ago. I haven't had a chance to react to this code. So you're actually helping me get work done here at the moment, okay? Because I need to know about these things called view components. Now, view components are essentially the equivalent of child actions. Who knows about child actions? Okay, so child actions are a concept in MVC. They're basically an action within an action, okay? So view components is essentially the same thing, just better named. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's okay. Here, we can see code within MVC's code base that is an extension method. Okay, so we might actually blow this up a little bit to help people's eyes. Okay, so we can see that this is an extension method, okay, off diagnostic source. So it's very easy for the developer to go diagnostic source dot before view component, okay? And then inside of this, they're doing their isEnabled, okay, before, they're doing their pre-flight check, okay, before they actually write out the event. So very, very similar to the quick sample that we did up previously. So I want to consume this, and so I come in here and I copy out the string that I want to have. And so I go diagnostic name, and so, oops, double quotes. Okay, so now we have that, and I'll go on, and this is just the convention that we've got, okay? And so public void, okay, so there's our method. So we're creating our stub for the callback that's going to be executed in our code, okay? And you can have multiple people listening to the one event. So Glimpse is interested in this before view component events. You might be interested in it for some reason, okay? So multiple people can listen to these. Now, when it comes to what parameters I want to have access to, these are the different parameters that I can actually get passed into my, and I'll scroll that up a little bit for people at the back, what I can actually get parsed in. Okay, so you can see here, action descriptor, the view component context, and the view component itself. Great. Okay, so let's go over here. Back to here. And this is what I want to be parsing in. And the way that the duck typing works is by convention off the names. So the object types don't need to match, but the names need to match. Okay, so that's how we work. And so we can see here the first one, I'm just going to use object at the moment. So you can see action descriptor. Then we want view component object. And lastly, so we've got the id descriptor for the action being run, the view component context, and the view component itself. Oops. Okay. And we're going to set a breakpoint here. I don't need that anymore. And let's execute this. Don't want to execute that project. What happened there? Don't want to rearrange that either. Okay. So we play this one. So we're starting this up. Same experience as we've experienced previously. And now, if I go to here, okay, now, on this page, I'm not sure if I've got a view component. Okay, so let's do something else where we can see that this is running the way that we expect. So after view, let's set a breakpoint. Okay, so inside of here, we can see that on the after view method called, okay, which is the event that we're listening for that one. Okay, now the reason why my new event hasn't occurred is because we don't have a view component actually registered in this sample. So out of the box, when you go file new project, you know, and you go like basically empty project, we don't have a view component, hence why that's not executing. Okay, but if I had more time, we'd actually add that to the project. Okay, but we don't, and so we'll kind of stop there. But you can kind of start seeing how we would start stubbing this sort of stuff out. So if you're after consuming in a rich capacity, you know, some of this diagnostics information you can. So kind of in summary, let's take a look at where we got up to. So we had a look at adding the exception middleware, okay, so that we can actually handle those exceptions and actually see the details of them. Again, we saw that we could actually get quite deep into like even the source code that actually generated these exceptions. We saw we had runtime info. Okay, that was quite useful for different scenarios. We also saw that we had the logging, and we looked at like the API viewing, okay, and we didn't quite get into the processing, but as far as the API is concerned, we can create the logger, okay, and we can do like any sort of log statements that we want. We can view those, so we saw that we can do via console or debug or however else we want to consume this information. Then we saw in terms of processing it, what we could have done is very easily created a logger provider. Okay, you register the log provider, then each time you create a new logger, okay, we could have had our one created, and hence we would be notified every time a log statement occurs, okay, if we wanted to be told. Okay, so that can work quite efficiently as well. So here you can see some code in the background that just on create log on line 16 there, we're creating our logger, and then you get access to all the log statement or log state, okay, for a given request. Then we had a look at diagnostic source, okay, and the diagnostic source adapter. So diagnostic source out of the box is very, very low level. It's basically just is enabled and write, and the basic way to consume it is via an observable, basically an event. If you want that nicer syntax, okay, and like the attribute and the automatic parameter mapping and stuff like that, that's where the diagnostics adapter comes in, okay, which sits over the top of it. And then we saw publishing and consuming that. Okay, so in this case, we saw is enabled and writing. And then we saw from a consuming perspective, how we can actually consume that information really nicely as well. Okay, then for Glimpse, we didn't quite get down into the nitty gritty detail of how Glimpse actually works. Okay, but we saw that we're collecting the information. We have what's called an agent server model, which if anyone's used to Glimpse V1, we didn't necessarily have that. It was more like, here's one package, that one package you install. And that's great for development time, but in production where you potentially have multiple web front ends, okay, and you want like one server collecting the data, we now support that. Okay, and that's an agent server model. Okay, and then we actually have the client that you can run through. So kind of in summary, everything that we've seen is kind of like diagnostics, logging, diagnostic source, okay, and Glimpse. These are kind of the fundamental pillars of diagnostics within VNext, as it were. Some of them are much more high level, okay, like the exception page, like Glimpse. Glimpse is designed to be your companion that as you're doing development, it'll actually update as you're navigating around the system, okay, as we saw. Okay, and we've got a lot more to do there, but it's going to happen pretty quickly in terms of trying to get you that information as you go along. So middleware, we actually want to visualize what's going on with middleware for you. Okay, so as you're starting experimenting with that, you can actually see how it operates. Okay, So go ahead and try it. If you're interested in Glimpse, check out the project, getglimpse.com. We hope to have a CTP available for that very soon, okay? So probably sometime in November, and you'll actually be able to start getting that, downloading it and installing it on sample projects that you start playing around with, so you can kind of see how things are put together. Please leave feedback, and thank you very much. Is there any questions on anything that we've seen here today? Okay, cool. Awesome. If you do have anything, feel free to come down. Thank you very much, guys.